This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of sickle cell anemia from the pediatric section on orthobullets.com. Sickle cell disease is a genetic disorder of hemoglobin synthesis that occurs in two phenotypes, sickle cell anemia and sickle cell trait. Sickle cell anemia involves the presence of two abnormal hemoglobin S alleles, and this is the more severe form. Sickle cell trait involves a single copy of the abnormal hemoglobin gene. These patients are usually asymptomatic. However, there is an increased risk of sudden death with exertion. This has been a tested point on previous exams, so I'll say it again. Sickle cell trait does have an increased risk of sudden death with exertion. This is due to collapse, and these patients respond early to oxygen, rest, and hydration. Sickle cell trait is the more common form. As far as the epidemiology, approximately 2 million Americans carry the sickle cell gene and is seen in 1 in 12 African Americans. As far as the pathophysiology, under low oxygen conditions, the affected blood cells become, quote, sickle-shaped and are unable to pass through vessels efficiently. Again, the pathophysiology of sickle cell anemia is that under low oxygen conditions, the affected blood cells become, quote, sickle-shaped and are unable to pass through vessels efficiently. Orthopedic manifestations of sickle cell anemia include sickle cell crisis, osteomyelitis, septic arthritis, osteonecrosis of the femoral and humeral heads, bone infarcts, growth retardation / skeletal immaturity, and dactylitis, specifically acute hand / foot swelling. As far as imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP and a lateral of the involved area. As far as findings, bone infarcts are common, as well as biconcave, quote, fishtail vertebrae. An MRI is recommended for differentiating bone infarction from osteomyelitis. So make sure to obtain a gadolinium-enhanced T1 sequence, which will identify infection. A bone scan also helps differentiate infarct from infection. As far as general studies to obtain, serum labs should include CBC, ESR, and a CRP, and these may be elevated in both osteomyelitis and sickle cell crisis. Joint aspiration and culture may be necessary to determine if diagnosis is osteomyelitis or sickle cell crisis. The presentation of sickle cell crisis is usually severe bone pain. Patients usually begin near age 2 to 3 years old. The pain is caused by substance P, and this condition may lead to bone infarcts. Treatment is typically non-operative with hydroxyurea, which provides pain relief during bone crisis. Osteomyelitis in the setting of sickle cell anemia is often seen in the diaphysis. As far as the organism, there is an increased incidence of salmonella, which may spread from a gallbladder infection. Again, osteomyelitis in the setting of sickle cell anemia is often in the diaphysis, and there is an increased incidence of salmonella, which may spread from a gallbladder infection. Staph aureus and salmonella are the most common organisms causing osteomyelitis in children with sickle cell disease, although it's unclear which is more common. Salmonella osteomyelitis occurs most commonly in children with sickle cell disease. As far as imaging, radionucleotide bone scan and radionucleotide bone marrow scan can differentiate bone infarct from osteomyelitis. Osteomyelitis will have a normal marrow uptake and an abnormal bone scan, while an infarct will have a decreased marrow uptake and an abnormal bone scan. As far as evaluation of osteomyelitis in the setting of sickle cell anemia, make sure to aspirate and culture to differentiate from a bone infarct. As far as septic arthritis in the setting of sickle cell anemia, sickle cell patients are susceptible to infection due to hyposplenia, sluggish circulation, as well as decreased opsonization of bacteria. The presentation of septic arthritis in the setting of sickle cell anemia include bone pain and fever. Labs will have an elevated ESR and CRP. As far as studies, you should aspirate the joint and culture to identify the organism, and treatment should be irrigation and debridement. Consider preoperative oxygenation and exchange transfusion prior to surgery. Finally, let's talk about avascular necrosis of the femoral head, which can be bilateral in sickle cell disease. The presentation of these patients will be hip pain with weight bearing. Treatment can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes partial weight bearing and range of motion, which is indicated as the initial treatment. Operative options include a total hip arthroplasty, which is indicated for failed non-operative treatment, as well as in cases of intractable pain. As far as outcomes, results of total joint arthroplasty are poor due to ongoing remodeling of the bone in sickle cell patients. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, you are the team physician for a collegiate football team and receive weekly injury reports from the athletic trainer. All patients with sickle cell trait are listed at the bottom to remind all on-field personnel that they may need which of the following. And the choices are 1, oxygenation, supplementation, and oral or IV hydration, 2, additional layers of warm clothes, 3, increased pain medication, 4, avoidance of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medicines, and 5, days of rest due to increased joint pain. The correct answer to this question is 1, oxygen supplementation and oral or IV hydration. So players with a blood test indicating the presence of sickle cell trait are at risk for exertional sickling collapse, which responds initially to rest, hydration, and oxygen. Sickle cell trait is not a disease but a condition resulting from inheritance of one gene for sickle hemoglobin and one gene for normal hemoglobin. The vital concern is exertional sickling collapse, which can be fatal, occurs in a variety of sports, and is the leading cause of death in college football. According to the review by Eichner, sickling collapse is a, quote, intensity-associated syndrome that differs from other common causes of collapse. The best approach in college football may be tailored precautions to prevent sickling collapse and enable athletes with sickle cell trait to thrive. Other clinical concerns in sickle cell trait are compartment syndromes and lumbar myonecrosis, splenic infarction, gross hematuria, hypostenuria, and venous thromboembolism. Kark et al. Reviewed all cases of sudden death occurring among 2 million enlisted recruits during basic training in the U.S. Armed Forces from 1977 to 1981. They concluded that, quote, recruits in basic training with the sickle cell trait have a substantially increased age-dependent risk of exercise-related sudden death unexplained by any known pre-existing cause. Moving on to the next question. Hematogenous osteomyelitis caused by Salmonella is most common in which of the following patient populations? And the choices are 1, neonates, 2, intravenous drug abusers, 3, patients with sickle cell disease, 4, patients with chronic kidney failure requiring dialysis, and 5, patients with puncture wounds through athletic shoes. The correct answer to this question is 3, patients with sickle cell disease. So osteomyelitis is defined as the acute/chronic inflammatory process in the bone secondary to infection with pyogenic organisms. There are 2 described methods of infection, direct inoculation or hematogenous spread of organisms. Puncture wounds through athletic shoes are one example of direct inoculation causing osteomyelitis, most commonly Pseudomonas species. Hematogenous osteomyelitis caused by Salmonella species is characteristic of patients with sickle cell disease. Salmonella bacteria is able to infect patients with sickle cell disease due to microinfarcts in their circulatory system, specifically in the intestines. Once in the blood, sickle cell disease patients have a decreased ability to fight potential infections due to their functional asplenia and impaired complement activity. Newborns younger than 4 months are typically affected by Staphylococcus aureus, Enterobacter species, and Group A and B Streptococcus species. Intravenous drug abusers and dialysis patients who develop osteomyelitis are often infected by Staphylococcus, Enterobacter, Pseudomonas, or Streptococcus species. Moving on to the next question. A 3-year-old African-American child presents with irritability, fever, and a warm swollen leg. Imaging shows an area concerning for osteomyelitis and transcortical biopsy reveals multiple Salmonella species. This child most likely has which of the following conditions? And the choices are 1, osteogenesis imperfecta, 2, child abuse, 3, thalassemia, 4, sickle cell anemia, and 5, renal failure. The correct answer to this question is 4, sickle cell anemia. So Salmonella osteomyelitis is directly associated with sickle cell anemia. No documented cases of Salmonella osteomyelitis have been seen secondary to renal failure, osteogenesis imperfecta, or child abuse. While one documented case of thalassemia minor-related osteomyelitis has been shown to be caused by Salmonella species, this is the only documented case, and as such, sickle cell anemia is the more likely choice. While the most likely cause of osteomyelitis and sickle cell anemia is still Staphylococcus aureus, Salmonella osteomyelitis almost exclusively occurs in patients with sickle cell anemia. The exact mechanistic cause of susceptibility to Salmonella osteomyelitis in sickle cell anemia isn't entirely known. However, it is thought that the spread of Salmonella from the GI tract is facilitated by the intravascular sickling in the bowel. In addition, the impaired immunological function of patients with sickle cell disease prevents appropriate clearance of Salmonella-related infections. And moving on to the final question, a 12-year-old boy with sickle cell anemia complains of 24 hours of pain in the right thigh. He denies any traumatic injury. The right leg has tenderness with palpation of the mid-thigh. The patient's temperature is 100.2 degrees Fahrenheit and ESR is 45. Radiographs of the femur are unremarkable. A radionucleotide bone scan demonstrates abnormal uptake in the mid-femur. A radionucleotide bone scan demonstrates decreased uptake within the marrow. Which of the following is the best step in management? And the choices are 1. Symptomatic care for his pain with non-weight-bearing crutches, intravenous hydration, and consultation with hematology. 2. Steroid injections of the quadriceps. 3. 2 weeks of an oral cephalosporin and follow-up radiographs. 4. Bone biopsy for culture and intravenous antibiotics. And 5. Surgical debridement, culture, and intravenous antibiotics. The correct answer to this question is 1. Symptomatic care for his pain with non-weight-bearing crutches, intravenous hydration, and consultation with hematology. Sickle cell crisis resulting in bone infarcts can be difficult to differentiate from acute osteomyelitis with physical exam and plain radiographs alone. This child is undergoing a bone infarct as confirmed by his radionucleotide scans. Skaggs et al. Reviewed 79 cases of acute extremity pain in sickle cell patients. Radionucleotide bone marrow and bone scan was used to differentiate osteomyelitis from bone infarct. 4 cases of infection were diagnosed by normal uptake on the bone marrow scan and abnormal uptake on the bone scan. These cases were confirmed osteomyelitis by positive culture. 70 cases were diagnosed as bone infarct by decreased uptake on the bone marrow scan and abnormal uptake bone scan. Chambers et al. Reviewed the charts of 2,000 known sickle cell patients. 14 patients had an episode of osteomyelitis or septic arthritis. Radiographs and bone scans were not helpful in differentiating infection from an acute bone infarct. Salmonella was the most frequent organism cultured from the osteomyelitis cases. The authors recommended bone aspiration or biopsy in a sickle cell patient with extremity pain, swelling, and a fever greater than 38.2 degrees Celsius. That's all for this review about sickle cell anemia. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.